Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just for a minor hand to join us, we have Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you need to reach me via Skype. My Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, you want to follow me on to Twitter. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, I have a secondary account called Franz Games where I announce this podcast and different news, including client updates. This lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes, Google Play Store, and other feeds around the net. Unfortunately, there is no news from ADB this week. They seem to have taken off, or at the very least, they're quiet about the goings-on at ADB. So it's all quiet, hush, hush. So, moving on to the Sipping Light Tournament news then. We have, of course, Rat 47, run by Bill Schiller. Still waiting for that tournament game to complete. Looks like there was a question to the judge, and that has been hopefully answered as well as possible. Comes the World League tournament run by Peter Bakia. That is now over. We have a winner. That's the Orion Oldies in Bikinis. That was made up of Ken Lin, Majid Farsi, and Jared Akita. Moving on to the Platinum Hat Tournament, also run by Bill Scheller. Oh, sorry, that's the question. That was the Platinum Hat Tournament game that had a question, not Rat 47. I apologize. That game has not, the Rat 47 game has not, the finals have not been started yet. Oh, just a little reminder for Rat 47, that's actually Clayton Kruger versus Paul Graves. On the, when it comes to the Platinum Hat 2017 front, look, we got three games out of need to be played on round four, so round one, which is great to see. There's actually, you know, progress there. Also, two games have been completed in round two, so we already have some round three people, well, actually, round three people that are waiting for other round two games to complete. I can't wait for that. And actually, I posted a quick little thing when it comes to round one players because of it's coming up on the end of January. Come on, people, let's at least get things started. And I mentioned that if they had gotten started, please post here just to say, okay, that they've got some progress. Moving on to actually the library report. There actually was some progress, not some progress. It's kind of weird. Carnivons. We actually had some kind of progress. There was an update to the Carnivons and actually one additional third-gen ship definition created. This was an addition, not a replacement, which meant that completed conversions actually went up to 2,386. And yet to be converted still remains at 964. The percentage complete, I didn't recalculate it because I figured it was 1. So the numbers, actually, the percent complete would have gone up slightly, probably from 71.2 to like 71.2. 0.3 possibly, you know, we're talking about one out of 3,000. So it's even smaller. So it probably didn't even show a blip on the conversion on the percent complete. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me. Yay! looks like it's the chat room's kind of barren, and there's no one else to talk to at the moment. But that will not stop us from going forward to traverse, to go where no one has ever thought to go before, and possibly good, for good reason. I will be talking about, as my first topic for this evening, actually learning games. You know, how, you know, different ways of learning to play at different games. One of the things that came up this past week when I was at Gamers of Winter, which actually was quite fun. I didn't get to play as many games as I wanted to. Of course, there was an added stress level because of one of my friends that he got invited to a poker tournament in Norristown. And on the way to Norristown, his car started acting up and got to Norristown and his car would not go anywhere. So I got stressed because, okay, no one else was going to pick him up. So I volunteered to pick him up. And then he said, hold on. And then, you don't have to. It's like, I quit the game I was currently playing, so I go pick you up. So that happens, but hey, I'm not complaining. Because to be honest, the game was pretty much over, in my mind anyway, just because I was so behind. I was behind everything. You know, I looked at it, it's like, I'm going to lose big time, and the obvious winner was going to be Barry. Just looking at it, it's like it was kind of obvious that Barry was going to win this whole thing. So it's like, you know, let's cut to the chase and just say, declare Barry the winner. You and Fritz can go play another game, and me, I'm going to go head out and go pick up Doug and bring his butt all the way back here. And then spend, after I drop him off, I'm then leave and go home. But fortunately, he worked out details, and so I was able to stay. But one of the things I did get was was it that night that afforded me? No, it was the next night that afforded me the opportunity. Actually, the next day that afforded me the opportunity, because Barry wanted to go play Twilight Imperium. If anyone knows Twilight Imperium, Twilight Imperium is actually is kind of a neat game. I actually was more interested in what's considered a kind of lighter version of Twilight Imperium called Eclipse. So I actually watched them play Eclipse for a while. I actually got the kind of gist of how things went with going for that. And I went, you know, it's kind of a neat game. So, you know, I watched it for a bit, but while waiting for that, you know, that game, the Eclipse, they were playing that night. I just hung out and watched them play Eclipse instead of heading to go pick up Doug. But the next thing, you know, with Twilight Imperium, I was like, okay, he said, we're going to play Twilight Imperium when we're done. You know, why don't you do this? You get caught up. You caught up reading up on this one game, Scythe, Scythe. It's called. It's spelled S. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, which is S C Y T H E. It's kind of like steampunk to a certain degree, in that it's like 1920s with mechs. Now, here's the funny part about this game. It's not about combat at all. It really isn't. The mech thing is just kind of, it's pretty much inconsequential. I think part of the reason to have the mech thing in there is to draw attention, because of a lot of people like mechs. I'm one of those people. I think the whole idea of having a large battle robot, which you sit in and you fight in, is really cool. And believe it or not, I can imagine us in the future doing that. Just because of, if you can provide that link between pilot and mech. In my mind, that could probably be more effective than any tank, you know, because of the maneuverability factor. That's the key. And that was one of the keys. If you ever read any of the background material for BattleTech, that is part of that material. One of the things is the creation of these basically artificial muscles that react really quickly and can do things a heck of a lot faster than any hydraulics can do. And that, of course, that's going to be the key to making any mech, you know, the whole idea of a fighting robot, agile enough to actually be useful in combat. Because if it's slow, like I'm thinking about the kind of mech, the loading kind of mech from Aliens. Yeah, Aliens. It's the second movie of the Alien series. Which, to me, that looks like a viable thing to use, because in my mind, it's very flexible. It can move things a lot more easily, so you can, you know, I think it's a grand idea. But, you know, that they use completely hydraulics. So it's kind of slow, for the most part, compared to what you'd want in a battle robot. Now, getting back in Scythe, the only reason to even have the mechs is, one, of course, is the interest. Number two, there are certain things that kind of lend itself to mechs, in that you can the mechs get these abilities, and these mechs are kind of used less for combat and more of a way of moving resources and people. Yeah, agreed. Dave's just doing, I'm chasing my own rabbits. Yeah, I have a tendency of doing that. But anyway, you know, they use it as a platform for moving things. So you can, especially when it comes to the big thing, which is because of the map, is, and obviously the game's designed this way explicitly, which is you have like five different people starting, and each person is basically starting on their own kind of island. To a certain degree, they're all separated by a river. Now, one of the abilities that a mech can attain is the ability to traverse rivers. So until you get that, you cannot cross into another person's territory until that time. So, which is, to me, it's like, okay, so you start in almost like a little island. You're protected. So you can, at the beginning of the game, you can start building up resources. You can build up, you can build up people. And then, you know, you can get your, basically get the beginning of your economy and war engine rolling. Now, so it's kind of an interesting game. And as mentioned in the book, it's like, you know, when it comes to the whole idea, the whole goal of the game is to get as much money as possible. Now, the one thing to have the most money at the end. Now, there's one thing, which is to end the game, somebody has to reach six goals. And there's like eight possible goals that you can reach. They're called stars. And you have to get six of them. As soon as someone gets six of them, boom, game's over. You total up how much money you have at the end. So basically that just puts a timer on things. So if people want things to end sooner because they figure they have more money, and they'll end up with more money, then of course you want to end sooner than later, because of, you never know what your opponents might do and actually beat you. So anyhow, the way I learned that game, Lord knows, was actually reading through the manual. Now, this is one of those games. This is a unique game in my mind, and that is it. To a certain degree, it's, well, actually, to a certain degree, it isn't. In a certain degree, it is. The first time I've ever played a game like this, and that is a lot of the way it's played. A lot of the rules are there on the board. Now, the one critical thing, and I do mean critical because I ran into like three or four times where I did not follow this rule and it bit me in the butt and I wasted time learning this game. And that is that for this game, for Sith or Scythe, however you want to pronounce it, I'm going to say Scythe, you need to read the setup rules very carefully, because the setup rules, if you don't follow them, what invariably you end up doing is, okay, why am I doing this? Well, you know, what's preventing me from, you know, what's the purpose of this? For example, there is what's called factory cards. And I read in the rules that, okay, when you actually get to the first time you get to the factory, you get a factory card. Well, that factory card, you go through the hand and you get to pick one. Well, one thing I've read at the beginning of the startup rules is that all you got to shuffle it and, you know, put it on the side. I didn't read it fully. The first sentence said shuffle it. The second sentence for that setup rule, which is on the graphic, because there's a graphic, and then there's setup rules are all around the board, and they just little box and they point to where these things are. The second sentence of that rule said, now select out number of players plus one of cards. So it's like, oh, that's why you shuffle them. When I read the other rule later on, you know, because I'm just trying to figure out how this whole game works, I read that and I went, why do you shuffle it if you get to look at all the cards? And this is after I had learned, I already screwed up twice. So I went back to the setup rules because I know I missed something. And yep, I missed something. I missed the second paragraph, second sentence of that setup rules. So I was like, that's why. You shuffle them so you can then pick out the top, you know, player plus one cards. So they're totally random. And then, you know, then you can select out of the full, you know, the smaller set. You get to select from theirs. So, and anyway, okay, that's how I learned it. Learned this game. Now, the problem, the only problem with this game is that Barry's game, you know, big surprise, Twilight Imperium went longer than he expected. Ah, big shocker! He started playing around noon and asked me if I wanted to play, and went no, because invariably, Twilight Imperium, I've seen games. I've seen him play multiple games of Twilight Imperium. What invariably happens is, it takes somewhere 6 to 8 hours to play. Now, if my goal for the day is to play one game, and that'd be Twilight Imperium, I'd be happy to play learn Twilight Imperium and play it. But I've yet to actually have the goal to play Twilight Imperium. The only reason I'm even right now even slightly interested is because I saw Eclipse, and in Eclipse I start to understand some of the game mechanics. You know, and went, this is kind of a neat game. You know, and I watched Twilight Imperium just a little bit, enough to realize that, yeah, for the most part, you know, Eclipse is a pared-down version of Twilight Imperium. You know, I'm sure there's different mechanics, comparatively speaking. But for the most part, you know, they run on the same ones. Like, It's like going and playing what? Oh, what's the one I was just thinking of? Dominion, which is a deck building game. There's, once you know the mechanics of a deck building game, Dominion is a great example of a deck building. It's, I think it's considered the premier. You know, if you're going to learn a deck building game, that's the one to learn. And I'm sure there's other games that are just like it that you go, oh yeah, just like it, you know, just different mechanics, different setting, you know, and I've said a little twists and turns. The one thing I know I've mentioned before, which is Settlers of Catan, Star Trek edition, which is to me is really interesting in that. So it's like Settlers of Catan. It's not just that they added background material, which is Star Trek, but they actually added additional mechanics, which are Star Trek specific. And I think that really, really improves the game. It sets that game up an extra level. Now, to get back to more to the topic at hand, ADB games, and learning them. There's multiple ways of actually learning a game. Now, obviously, I think we all can agree on one thing. And that is the best way to learn a game is to have another person. And especially with board games, I gotta mention this real quick. Because I don't think... I did not actually mention this last week because of my bowling teammate had never mentioned it. I talked to him on Friday, so you know, it's a little no space time thing. But anyway, he I told him I was going to a game convention, going there, and play some games. And he said, "So how they're gonna set it up? You know, how they gonna, what kind of games they're gonna have? You know, what kind of are they gonna set up video displays? They're gonna set up the different kinds of screens. What kind of computers they're gonna be using? What kind of systems they're using?" And I went, dude, board games, games you put down on a table." And you play them in real life. These are not video games. These are normal, everyday board games. Not everyday game board games. But if you want to play an RPG, there's RPGs available. There's Dungeons & Dragons that some people want. They play that. You know, and we have different board games that we play, you know. And to him, it was like a foreign concept. Now, of course, here's the one thing. My dear bowling team mate, he's like 20 years younger than me. Now, so he's like 30. I think he's in his 30s. 20s. No, he must be in his 20s. Because he just had a kid. So I'm hoping he's in his 20s and not his 30s. Eesh. Having a kid when you're 30 years old, that starts getting a little tough on you. But anyhow, he gets confused about the whole thing. Now, I mentioned that, and I just want to mention this, which is. Board game. I'm not down on board games. As in, I feel hopeful for the continued play of board games, card games, things that you actually sit down at a table and play with people. You know, actually interact with individuals, not over a screen, but in real life. And this is why. Both my girls. Now, maybe it's just because of one, they grew up watching me play. They also got to play some games, which was interesting. That's one thing I was mentioning to Barry just this weekend, which is I never taught my girls how to be cutthroat when it comes to Munchkin. Because I'm sure any of you who've played Munchkin before, you know that, okay, the whole idea is the first person to get level 10, they win. Well, we never played with the kind of cutthroat play that a lot of people do. So you're about to win. So here's this monster for you. So then you'll fail. Oh, this negative thing against you. Boom. You know, do that. No, it was more of, okay, let's see what I can do and see how fast I can get to level 10. And people didn't interfere with each other. Even though the rules said you can. I never taught him how to do that. So, which was interesting when I saw him play it one time with their friends, and they weren't doing that. And it's like, I realized, like, oh, I never did go to that, on to the next step. Because when I first taught them, they were like kids. I mean, under the age of 10. When I taught them how to play Munchkin. And they're teenagers, and they're playing Munchkin with their friends. And I'm going, you know, I probably should have played another couple games with them and shown the next level, which is the idea of being a little more cutthroat about it. You know, they're actually competing with people. But, yeah, it was weird. So I told them, I thought that was really weird. And that grade's kind of weird. But anyway, so board games, are still going to be a thing. Now, the question is, of course, for board games and card games and things like that where you're playing a physical game, which is what we're talking about here. Ignore video games. Ignore it completely. Because video games are a totally other beast. And Lord knows my son could probably give me a tutorial on how to learn how to play video games. And number one thing is to watch a lot of YouTube videos. That seems to be the key, for at least for him. So he can go through the levels without actually going through the levels. You know, and after he goes watch the YouTube videos enough, then he'll start playing. Which is interesting, if you really think about it. But, okay, I think we all can agree that if you can go through the rules with someone who already knows how to play, that is the best way of learning a game. That's number one. Number two, you know, the next one is obviously, like, this is where it comes interesting, which is what's the easiest for you to learn? It's like going to school. Each person learns best a certain way. Some people, the best way they know how to learn is to go to lecture, take notes. Possibly even when a test comes up, what do they do? I know my wife, she would look at our notes and then recopy them. So it in her brain. Now, obviously, I think part of, I'm a little different because of the classes I took versus her. She's a liberal arts, thank you, student. In other words, she was a psychology major. And me, well, comp sci. So, invariably, what's mine related to? Math. And related to things related to that. So, for me, the way I would study for a test is I would do problems. Test problems. So, you know, basically applying what I supposedly learned in class. And obviously, to do that the way I had to learn when it comes to that stuff, it's always, I learned the hard freaking way. Which was, when it comes to that, is I had to learn, and then practice. And that seems to be, to me, the best way. Now, that you can actually directly correlate that to learning games. And that is, what best approach is for you? Do you best sit down and read the rules from beginning to end and then try to start playing? You know, go through setup. Okay, here's the rules for setup. Bum, bum, bum. Here's how you do turn one. You know, this is how you go through. Here's the mechanism for the turn. Bum, 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 bum. And so forth. Or is a better process for you to read the setup rules and then go through the charts? Lord knows, with FedCom and Starfleet Battles, you know, they have multiple charts. And if you read this beginning part, to say, okay, how does the turn run? And then learn that way, which is, okay, as you hit that part in the turn, then you read the rules. Now, again, as I said, if you have this is where it becomes interesting to me, which is, let's say that you don't have another person, meaning you don't have a person who actually knows how to play the game. Because obviously, as I pointed out earlier, that would be the optimum to do. Now, the question is, do you do it that way? You know, if you have that ability to have someone who can say, you know, let's to walk you through the game without having to read all the rules, that's always best. Because why? Because you won't get frustrated by not understanding the rules. Because Lord knows, the first time that I actually played Starfleet Battles, I did not know how to play. And I know that I got things wrong. So, you know, learning by yourself is definitely suboptimal, but in a lot of cases, you know, either you don't have someone who is enthused about learning about the game, or you just don't have someone to play with. Because, come on, let's be honest here. Board game groups are few and far between these days, at least in my mind. The great thing actually about Gamers of Winter and Gamers of Summer is because twice a year, what do? You know, it's almost more of a gaming group than anything else, in that every 6 months we get together. You know, Doug gets together, he finds us a place to play. We pay him so that, you know, he can keep on doing this, and hopefully I'm hoping he gets a little profit out of it, because he's he's spending all this time getting the convention all set up. You know, finding the place, getting the GMs to commit to different games to play. Obviously, there's a D&D group who floats with us. I think it was Greyhawk. You know, that campaign that's all ties into Dungeons and Dragons. And they definitely help, because Lord knows, 50% of them, 50% of the attendees, at least at this week's, was Dungeons and Dragons. Though, I think it was the last time or the time before, we got it up so that they were only like a third. You know, which is, because, you know, we got to like 70 players, and those guys only make up around 20 at max. You know, so, you know, yes, it's kind of a small convention, but you know, it's a single room convention. But it works. Now, obviously, another way of learning is videos. Now, in my mind, if you're going to use videos to learn a game, a board game, number one, you're going to have to do is you're going to have to read the rules. You're going to, the whole, in my mind, in that case, it's almost like a lecture when it comes to going to college. What's the first thing you do if you're going to a lecture? Normally, the person who's lecturing wants you to, more importantly, read about the topic before you come to the lecture. The whole idea of the lecture, to begin with, is to consolidate, to take the knowledge, what you think you understand by reading, and bring it together. And when they actually talk about it, hopefully they can answer your questions. Now, obviously, any good lecturer will actually let you ask questions, because then you'll, and to tie it all together so that you truly understand and understand correctly. So that, you know, that's another way of learning, which I think is, could be quite effective. But I would say you have to do things in the proper order. There are some people that the best way might be actually to watch a video first. Watch how the game, how the whole game mechanics work, and then read the rules about, okay, here's the game mechanics, here's the rules around the game mechanics, what you can and cannot do. Because I'm willing to bet you any game video that's going to show you how to play a game, will not actually go through all of the exceptions, all the rules, and go, you know, you can do this, but you can't do this. And you can do this, but you can't do that. You might be able to do it for certain games, but I doubt it. Because it's like any rule book. The more details that you give, more about the interactions that you have to document, you have to write down, the larger the rule book's going to be. Case in point, Starfleet Battles. If you look at all of the interactions of things, that's what you... That's why the rule book is so large. It's because of, okay, how about I have this system, how do they interact? And they'll write out how they interact. And I'm sure, I know I've explained this before, why that is the case, why it got so large. The reason why it got so large is one simple thing: rules lawyers. Plain and simple. And also, Starfleet Battles was created in an age but pre-internet. And what that really means to those you youngsters out there, there was a time there was no internet. That what people would do is people would learn the rules in their disparate parts of the United States, possibly the world. Remember this, I don't think Starfleet Battles ever got translated into a different language other than English, you know, like French or German or whatever, because Lord knows that's not cheap. And the question is, how many copies of the games would you actually sell? Not sure. I guess not that many. But anyhow, you have these disparate people learning the game, and then they come together, and then they say, well, no, that works. The rule works this way. No, the rule works this way. And so we'd have arguments over what the rules really mean. And that's why ADB, Steve Cole, had to explicitly write out the interactions so that there was no question about what the rules meant, what the rules said. So, you know, that's why Starfleet Battles is as large as it is. Now, so, you know, So you can do that. You can learn using videos. Now, obviously, there are other ways of doing it, which is kind of interesting if you really think about it in this day and age, which is, can you get another person not in person to help you? And there's two ways of doing that. One, obviously, is an online game system like Starfleet Battles Online, in that it does not implement the rules for you. Because here's the gotcha in my mind of having a tool which implements all of the rules. What happens if you have a system that implements all the rules, and that is, yeah, you can learn the rules, but tangentially learn the rules. Because you're not actively thinking about the rules. You'll kind of learn the rules by going, oh, I'm going to try this. Oh, that doesn't work. I wonder why it worked that way. Because maybe you haven't. I have given enough plugs here, which is Three Moves Ahead. If you listen to them, one of the things that they're actively doing when they're playing these games is they're trying to figure out the rules behind the game. Because a lot of these video games do not explicitly say these are the rules. Well, these are not video games per se. Like first-person shoot 'em up, first-person action games. They're more of real-time strategy games. But invariably, they have rules. And most of the time, those rules are not explicitly mentioned. So you have to figure out what the rules are. And that's one way of learning, I guess, is to figure out what... But the thing is, you don't know if that tool implements the rules correctly. Which is why you should know the rules first. Now, there's one way, which is, like a tool like SFB Online, where you act, or Vassal, or... I think that's the only two I know of at the moment where you actually can play board games over the internet. I mean, without it actually being the game itself. That's number one. Another way, which is a little more old school to a certain degree, which is, of course, a Skype session. Or, even like a webinar to a certain degree if you want to have a group kind of atmosphere. In that, you have a camera which is, instead of looking at you, looks at the board, and then use your voice. And then you can then go through the game with a person and possibly even shadow them. Meaning that, that person has a board in front of them, you have your board in front of you, you both have the cameras not pointing at yourself, but pointing at the board. Now, that becomes a little more difficult these days because more and more people, what do? They rely on their laptop cameras or their cameras built into their computers. That doesn't quite work when the board game has to be on the table. You can do it. It just means it makes it quite a challenge. You can do it. It just requires... mirrors, basically. But that's another way of doing, which is almost, it's pretty old school. It's almost like being there live. But, again, it's not optimal, but it will work at that level. Now, obviously, the best option, and I'm not sure how many games out there actually do this. Because I know there are some games, online versions of like Puerto Rico, which is a board game, which I like to play because it's actually it's kind of cool. It's actually quick funny thing is they actually played it when a game was winner because I got to play what's the game? I forget what game I was playing. But Barry got five people together to play Puerto Rico, which mean and the problem with that was that there was two people who didn't know how to play, which means it was they were going to be playing it for a long time because I talked about this a couple of years ago when I went to Council of Five Nations, which is probably it's like a year and a half ago, where I got to play Peter Bakia, and we played the fastest game of Puerto Rico that I've ever done. It was a two-player game, him against me. He had some time. He had like half an hour to kill. It's like, okay, we can get it done. We can do it. And we killed. And we got it done between 20 minutes and 30, 20 and 30 minutes. We got it all done. And it's like, wow. It's the fastest game of Puerto Rico I've ever played in my life. A speed version of Puerto Rico. Wow. I know some of my moves were suboptimal because we were playing two-player and because we were playing so fast. But I know that he needed to be someplace and play another game. So it's like, okay, fine. I'd be happy to do it. And we did it. And it was kind of interesting. So if you have an actual online game where it implements the rules but explains to you what the rules are. Okay, you can't do this. Okay, here's the rule. I don't know if there's any online gaming system that currently does that. Where if you do something wrong, it tells you what is the rule that this applies to and why it was wrong to begin with. So, to me, I don't think there's any. There might be, so I'm not going to dispute that possibility exists. I just don't know of any. Of course, I'm not constantly seeking out new games to play online. I don't have the time. I wish I did. And actually, invariably, I'm not interested in learning new games for the most part when it comes to online games. Starfleet Battles. Great. Actually, the one game I like to play online, Starfleet Battle Force. I keep saying that, but I don't mean that. I meant Starfleet Marines. That's the one game I really want to play. And that's why I really need to work heavily on the plugin to get that going, because that's one thing I really, really want to get done. So, I think we'll move on to the next topic. We definitely have just enough time to talk about it, which is one thing, which is improving this podcast. Now, obviously, a lot of times we end up with a podcast which is just me. In some cases, I think that's a good thing, and in some cases, actually, I prefer it that way. There's some days that for having topics like this, where I want to talk about this topic, and I know that if I get other people involved, they're not interested in that topic. Now, obviously, that's a good thing in some cases, and that's why I always I post the topic for this evening. The evenings that I do the podcast, one thing I always put down at the very bottom that the topics are subject to change without notice, and that's because of I go with the flow. If there's a different topic, which it, the person who's talking on the phone or talking, on Skype or whatever, which I still got to work out those details. They want to talk about, that's fine. And overall, I don't think the format really needs to change overall. I can definitely admit, if people have a real need to talk about a certain topic or want me to talk about a certain topic, please send me an email, sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Please, 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 please email me. I'll be happy to talk about anything that you want me to talk about. Or come up in the chat room. You know, log in, you know, 9:30 p.m. on Thursdays. You know, this Eastern time, just to let you know. I will be here. Now, just to let you know, I'm going to be honest. I never started at 9:30. I started at 9:35. That's when I start. Because I like to tell people to come at 9:30 and remember 9:30. But I like starting a little bit later just to give time. That's the stragglers that they're just barely. Oh, it's 9:30. Oh, I want to join the podcast. I want to join the streaming of it. You know, so they log in and they are there. You know, they end up a few minutes late, and I don't want them to miss anything. Yeah, Dave. Yeah, I know. He's saying that sometimes it doesn't start till 9:45 or something a little bit later than that. I try not to do that. I've done that a couple times. Assuming that there's no technical glitches, because the one time where we were dealing with Skype issues, it was Skype issues. Of course, people out there know about Skype. I think I mentioned that when we're having the issues with Skype, we still have, to my knowledge, we still have an issue with Skype, which is there's a bug which I need to report. Where if you have a group chat, you know, a group call, and you call a telephone number, there's no numeric keypad. You can't type in any numbers, which is what I used to do. I used to have a group call. So I could have Gary and then log in to TalkShoe, and we could have people talking through me as kind of a bridge to log in to TalkShoe. You know, and which worked out fantastic. Now, I think that works pretty well. If Skype can reactivate that feature, we can still use Skype. The one thing that actually I'm thinking about doing, which is kind of a crazy thing in my mind, but I've heard from people, which not you guys out there, but I listen to podcasts, and one of the podcasts I listen to called Daily Tech News Show. And they mentioned that, yeah, invariably most people listen to the podcast purely audio form only, which I can understand, and because I do the same thing. Because what's the great thing about audio? The great thing about audio only form, especially in something like this, where there's no visual component really, unless you want me to. Actually, I'm thinking about that, but I'll get to that in a moment. There's no real visual component. You can actually listen to me wherever you are. In the car, walking down the street, working, because invariably when I listen to my podcasts, I use them almost like background noise to a certain degree while I'm working. And only when I really need to focus, you know, if there's something, a reply I need to do, though, I need to focus, I turn off my podcast and I type. Because I know I need to focus and need to really think about this. But for the times where I'm doing basically grunt work, for the most part, stuff that I really don't have to think that hard about, I know what to do. Just do this, okay. Do some editing. Okay, I need to do this, this, and this. You know, I don't really need that great concentration. I can listen to my podcast, and in that case, if it's a video podcast, I wouldn't be watching the video. Like, why? That's why I invariably, you know, I prefer audio. And I think most people prefer audio. But the one thing that was mentioned in the Daily Tech News Show is that they actually have a following where certain people like to actually watch the video. And I went, that is an idea. So Sometime in the near future, and I do mean near future, there's certain details I need to work out. Number one, I need to get a camera. One thing that I don't think I've mentioned, I might have mentioned once or twice, but it's been a while since I've mentioned about my setup here. My setup is in my office. I've got this nice, wonderful mic, which I bought many years ago when I started this podcast. Was it this podcast or just podcast in general? I've had a couple podcasts where I kind of did a pod fade on. But this one hasn't. This one's still going strong. But I got this nice mic. Actually, I even was able to get a nice little desktop arm so I can move it around and position it properly, which is great. And nice little pop filter here. But my computer is a laptop. My laptop works 99.9% of the time in clamshell mode, i.e., I've got my external keyboard sitting right here in front of me. I've got my screen up there. I've got my mouse. The laptop is closed up, boom, and put away. Now, my setup here is a little different than it was in the old house. Because one, the old arrangement, I actually had an older computer, which that was my podcasting machine. This currently is not my it's what I'm using my podcast on, but it's my day-to-day driver. You know, what I do my SMB online stuff, my personal stuff that's all done on this one computer. I got my work computer, which is across the room. I think I mentioned it before, which I actually like the physical separation of the machines. And that's what I liked about the podcast machine. So that one, I just set up for doing podcasts. That's it. That was the task it was meant for, and that's all it did. Now, obviously, I can kind of do the same thing with this one. If I really wanted to, I could actually set up a separate account, which is my podcasting account. So it's kind of considered a separate computer. But, no, that's a big pain concerning the way I operate, which is I leave things up and running for ages, including browser windows. Lord knows I got some of these browser windows, which I've brought up over a month ago. It's like, I got to get around to reading that web page or working on that one of these, like Packer. If you know anything about virtual VMs and continuous delivery and continuous integration, you'll know a little bit about those. But anyhow, so one thing I'd actually like to do is actually set up. I'm not sure at the moment what I'd like it to be is this. What I'd want it to be is a screencast, i.e. I have the, chat room up. So while I'm recording the audio, you can see the chat room. And also on the corner of the screen of the video, you have me, you know, so you actually can see me. So I figured, you know, that would, to me, that's probably the best video setup for this podcast, because most of the action that occurs is me, you know, me talking. Invariably, yes, we have the chat room. Now, the tough part about this whole thing would be for if I if we do a screencast, that is, invariably, there are certain things that I probably want to hide. For example, I've got the recording thing up at the moment. Also, I have Skype running. You know, so would I want you to see that? Possibly not. You know, I'm not sure you want to see that. I'm sure you want to see the chat room, yes. But I don't think you want to see some of the other miscellaneous stuff that I need to record this video. I would record this podcast. You know? Maybe you're interested and you'd like to see it anyway. Or you don't care. You know, the only reason I'm even thinking about doing a video podcast at all, a screen, basically a screencast for of the podcast, is because the one thing the Daily Tech News show, you know, the Tom Merritt mentioned that there's some people, you know, that they have a small number of people who like the video feed and they like it that way. So if I would actually do that, what I would probably do is what they do, which is they actually have a YouTube channel. And I would create a YouTube channel for just stuff, just for this screencasts. So I'm going to look into see how I can do that. I got to see, I need to look into a camera. So I actually record here. And the tough part is going to be the audio setup, which all invariably it is. I'm probably going to have to use my audio hijack from Rogue Amoeba to set up the actual recording of the audio, maybe? I'm not sure. It's a complicated setup. It might actually require something which I really am trying to avoid, which is an actual hardware mixer. I might have to go all the way and go all the way to a hardware mixer, which costs me a little more money than I want to spend, but I might be required to do it if I want the video. That's number one. Number two, well, I've mentioned this before, and I'm still thinking about it, which is the possibility of moving off of TalkShoe. And this is for only one reason. The reason I might think about doing that is having a way of broadcasting to mobile devices. Now, if I move to like Discord, I could possibly do it that way. Now, I have to look at the controls that are available on Discord and see if they have the controls that I need that I currently have on TalkShoe. If not, then go with another thing I was thinking about doing, which is an alternate feed, meaning that using an alternate feed, I can have it so that instead of you, a person on a mobile device, listening from this you know, the chat window, bring up another tab. There's the hope. They can bring up another tab which points to the stream, because I actually can do a nice cast stream from my computer here. I can do a broadcast. Now, I can probably accept quite a few people connecting to it, and I think it'll be fine. I don't think I need to broadcast to a server. On a server somewhere, so because I don't think there's going to be enough people to actually listen. That I was going to listen to the feed. I can, if I get a large number, you know, if I get like over 50, actually if I get over like 25 of people listening live through that feed, then I'll think about getting a service. But until that time, there's no reason to get a service, because of I'm sure this my computer and my internet can handle audio only feeds. Now, I don't plan on doing a video stream. Video streams are a heck of a lot more expensive. In which case, then I'd have to move to something along the lines of, like, I was gonna say YouTube Live, but I don't think I can get into YouTube Live. Probably have to be something like Vimeo or Facebook Live or one of those other options if I want to do an actual video cast of what I'm doing here. I don't think people will be interested in that. I got a small enough chat room as it stands. Heck, it's possible people might actually want to see my ugly face. It's not ugly, but I'm not a pretty boy. I can tell you that now. A 52-year-old person, gray hair, you know, You know, my father's hair, which I'm actually happy about because of I actually have hair. My brother is like 2 years younger than me. Young, he doesn't have much hair. He hasn't had much hair for a long time. He has my grandfather's hair. My grandfather, you know, has the, you know, bald on the top and just kind of wisps of hair on the side of his head, and that's it. So, and he has not done the whole, you know, I have hardly anything, so I'm just going to just shave it all off. He hasn't done the whole bald man treatment, so it is what it is. So, that's things I like to do, and actually the funny part is that another reason to stay on TalkShoe at the moment is because it gives ADB a way to connect in. And if I didn't, I think I might be the question is, if I upgrade my Skype account to allow inbound calls, because currently I can do outbound calls. I got a subscription where I can do outbound calls. Big surprise. That's how I do TalkShoe. And actually with TalkShoe, they do have an option where you can upgrade and dial in to Skype. Now, the one thing that I found annoying is that you still need the numeric keypad for a Skype call. Well, if I don't have it. Maybe it's in the chat room. I'll double check, because that might be a way of getting around the issue with Skype. I'm hoping they just fix the Skype client. So, you know, I think, you know, that's a couple of things things I would like to do to the podcast to upgrade the formatting that occurs. Obviously, one thing that I've wanted to do for a while, which is publish the chat room. I'm capturing the chat for the most part. I've lost a couple of them because I've done something stupid where I closed the window before I captured the chat. I think I've got a small chat, you know, for tonight, because Lord knows, guest 3 Dave has been quite quiet. Big surprise. I'm not sure there's much for him to say, really, except for just listening to my ramblings. And, you know, Russ and Gary and Mike, the different people that invariably show up for a bit of time, aren't here tonight. And I'm sure they looked at the topic and went, "Neek, I can listen to it later. Maybe I'll listen to it later on." Either that, or they just, you know, they're busy doing other things with their lives. Now, you know, as a reminder, you know, the reason why I set up this podcast to begin with was to form a community. I want people to come and join us. I want to talk about topics. And that's one of the reasons why I am so not tied to the topics that I come up with. That if we come up with a good topic that we want to discuss in the chat room, or someone calls in and they, I want to talk about the latest miniatures and how ADB screwed them up, or, you know, the latest miniatures and how great they are, you know, or how excited I am to talk about the latest Empire that they started adding miniatures for. Or, you know, I can't wait for the next SMB product that they published. They got this going, blah, 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 you know, X2. Or the Zerkalians. Or, you know, any of these other things. I would love to talk about that anytime. I'm here. I want to talk about that stuff. You want to talk about Starfleet Marines? Let's talk about Starfleet Marines. Come on. I would love to talk about Starfleet Marines. In fact, I might do that just next time, is actually talk about Starfleet Marines and hopefully get some work done more work done on the plugin, because I have done some work on that. The big thing with Starfleet Marines is actually it's relatively simple. But the one key thing is movement, and the whole idea of counting movement was the tough part. And then what I might just do is have least for the first version that I have make, have available for people to play, is that it will do certain things, but there are it won't worry about certain situations in trying to measure that. Because the question is, you know, the big question for Starfleet Marines is, I'm sure people want those beautiful maps. That's one of the key things. And what I'll probably initially do is do it without the maps. Because it's easier to do it as a map overlay that is basically, it's a rudimentary map that says, okay, the different hexes have different colors. And those colors represent this, this, or this. You know. Not worry about things like cliffs. Not worry about mountains. Or might not even worry about elevation. Point of sight. You know, I can do point of sight. It's just, it's a pain. It's possible to do. I just have to figure that out. So I think with that, we will wrap up for this evening. And that's definitely going to be a topic for next week, which is Starfleet Marines. Whether we discuss the product itself, because I know it's been a while since we talked about the product. I know I did a review many, many years ago on the latest module, because there are two modules to the Starfleet Marines. And definitely, probably what I'll do is I'll do a there's a couple solo. I think there's at least one solo game in Starfleet Marines, which is Attack of the Zombies. Not, I don't think it's called Attack of the Zombies, but it's a zombie-oriented scenario, and the zombies are basically they're automated monsters. So they move into these. The idea is you have to wipe them out. So. I have not looked at the rules for that scenario, which I really should, because I think that might be interesting to play. So with that, you know, we had a nice little discussion here. Oh, not discussion. It was more me talking about playing games and learning, because there's so many different ways of how to learn a game, from just reading the book and playing a game to getting another person involved. Whether by hook or by crook, whether they know the game or not, you know, and just work together. Heck, that can be a lot of fun, just trying to figure out a game yourself, all the faux pas that you do, you know. And obviously talked about a nice, the podcast and things that I'd like to do with the podcast in the future. And I'm working toward, I have to spend the time in the case of the audio to set up. So that I can do a stream. That's one thing I'd like to try. Another one, obviously the video, which is going to be a little more costly because I have to buy a separate camera. But it can be done. And the camera can be under $100. So I think that's definitely doable. The tough part is going to be the connectivity. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.